Good everyone, and welcome to this episode of the AfriNuke podcast. On this podcast, we talk about different aspects of nuclear technology with the African voice. On today's episode, we have a very seasoned professional who is working with Deep Geo, a new company that implements different aspects of geological storage of nuclear waste. And on today's episode, we have somebody who is the captain of the ship for the African division of Deep Geo. I'm going to allow him to introduce himself, but before then, I want to give a very big thank you for the kind support of Emil Jacob and Matt Meyer for their support in keeping us hosted on RSS podcast. Their kind donation has helped us to continue in this endeavor. So, sir, please, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Good. Thank you very much, Jeremiah, for having me on this platform. My name is David Amwa. I am originally from Ghana, and that is where I stay. Professionally, I am a civil structural engineer, and I happen to work with Deep Geo Incorporated. Deep Geo has subsidiaries in Labrador, Canada. It originated from USA, so that's where the parent company is. And we also have subsidiaries in Ghana, in Somaliland, and then in Finland. So in brief, this is about me and our startup company, Deep Geo.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that very brief introduction, David. I would like to know, why Deep Geo, and why Deep Geo in Africa?
Right. Excellent. Deep Geo wants to solve a global environmental problem. And as it at it, it will also be able to generate income to support underserved communities in which Deep Geo will operate. The global environmental problem that we are talking about has got to do with spent nuclear fuel in the world currently.
Okay.
Now, the first nuclear reactor in the world was constructed for electricity production, that is, was constructed in 1954. That was in the then Soviet Union, in a place close to Moscow.
Obninsk,
that's right, you know. So that's where it started. Since that time, all the spent nuclear fuel that has been generated over the years, and that will be about 70 years now, are in temporary storage. They are either stored in casks on the surface near the nuclear power plants, or they are in water currently. Now, the time has come to dispose of the spent nuclear fuel as we have it now. It is estimated that there is 450,000 tons of it, and it's been growing between 10 and 12 tons yearly, and that problem needs to be solved. IAEA in 2004, that the solution to this problem has to do with multinational repositories, multinational deep geological repositories. That is, countries must agree so that those with a suitable geology can help and dispose of the waste as we have it. So this is what Deep Geo wants to do. And Deep Geo is in Africa, because Deep Geo thinks, or studies have shown, that Africa has the right geology in terms of being stable, and then having rock types that have low hydraulic conductivity, which means that it takes a very long time, millions of years, before, let's say, water can pass through 1 meter length of that rock. You see, so if, let's say, we provide that storage and then provide the relevant engineering barriers to isolate the waste or the spent nuclear fuel from the biosphere, over time, a very long time actually, the spent nuclear fuel will decay and will not become harmful. So this is the concept, and we think the science is proven, It is not a difficult science to understand. And we think an African country or Africa undertaking a project like that will bring in a lot of money for our development so that we may not have to borrow all the time. For every small project, then you have to borrow money, you know, to undertake. As we are embarking on having nuclear power plants or having nuclear programs in almost every country in Africa going forward, well, there is an alternative.
Fantastic.
Opportunity for us to embark on. So this is what DeepJewel is propagating.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Are there any limits to your operations? It's good that you are here already in Africa and you have observed the fields and you are already present in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
Do you encounter any kind of brick wall or limitations or challenges?
Well, there are challenges in any case. One of the basic challenges has to do with having the right geology.
Okay.
It's not everywhere that the geology will be suitable for such an operation. The other challenge has to do with public acceptance and political acceptance.
Okay.
These are the barriers to what we want to do. It's not about economics and it's not about technology.
Okay.
The barriers are, as I've mentioned, primarily public acceptance, political acceptance. And in fact, if the geology is not good, it's not good. It means such places may not be considered at all.
Mm.
Right.
Nice. So it's really interesting to see that the technology is there and the solutions that it brings is well recognized, but the public acceptance is the major drawback.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that with this, we can see more and see how we can enhance our advocacy to get a bit of public buy-in.
Yes.
If that will help us get this solution out there
on
the continent. So what's your business model in DeepJewel?
Well, it's like this. We already have the vision bearer who has been financing us from where he started in Labrador for 12 years.
Okay.
After the 12 years, he has managed to bring in people who have invested in DeepJewel.
Okay.
And then our investment model are in three parts. We call them Series A, Series B, and then Series C.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we are trying to close Series A now.
Wow.
And we need about $1.5 million to close Series A.
Okay.
Now, that is the challenge. For Series B, we have investors ready.
Okay.
Series A is to, the investment that we require is for public education, communication, licensing, you know, and stuff like that.
Okay.
That's for Series A.
Okay.
And we need $1.5 million to close it. The cost for that was $5 million. We've done $3.5 million and we need $1.5 million people to come in and then to close it. Now, it is paramount for DeepJewel to have African investors come on board so that they'll be represented on the board of DeepJewel. As we have it currently, those on the board are only Americans.
Okay.
You see. But we need African representation. You see.
Yes.
And if an African, and I know there are a lot of people in Africa that can pay $100,000.
Sure.
You pay $100,000, you'll be on the board. And we need an African.
Okay.
Because these are very long-term projects and we cannot just leave it somewhere. Now, when we close Series A, Series B funds are available. We already have people who bring in their big money. Series B is going to cost about $30 million.
Okay.
And we already have people.
So how do you plan to make money, in summary?
Well, the money will come from the management of the spent nuclear fuel.
Okay.
Right? We get a customer country, and we have customer countries, actually. You lift 1 ton, it's $1
million. 1 ton, $1
million. Yes. Do you see? One ton is $1 million. So if we get 10% of it, that would be 45 1,000 tons, and that will bring in $45 billion.
So in essence, do you, in your business model, design it in such a way that maybe Africa that doesn't have a nuclear power plant can receive spent nuclear fuel from another country?
Yes.
Interesting.
That is it. So what we are saying is, how are the African countries going to finance nuclear power programs?
Okay.
They're going to take loans.
Okay.
Right? They're going to take loans. In Ghana, for every small project, I'm not sounding political.
Okay.
But for every small project, even $80 million will go for loan.
Wow.
You see. And we are saying that if you are thinking of a nuclear power program, that's an industry that is intergenerational.
Yeah.
It's not going to end today. As we have heard, from the discussion about the plant up to construction to decommission, exploitation to decommission, it's going to take you 100 years. Do you get the point?
Yeah.
And the spent nuclear fuel will stay for hundreds of thousands of years. So it's a very long term, an eternal project. Do you see that? So if you're going to do that, what we are saying is that you can actually start your program, right, by, let's say, trying to manage the waste. When you begin to manage the waste, you're already into the program. You will get money then to develop your nuclear power plants. And this is not a new concept. And this is not even, it's not even only Deep Geo that has muted it before. Those that Ghana signed the contracts, you see, the concept is there, right? And it requires that somebody be bold. And it's very important that with the nuclear industry coming on board, we educate our people. It's not, it shouldn't even be more of, public education and that kind of thing. It should start from the schools. A child going to KG1, the teachers have a way of presenting things to them.
Yeah.
The one in the nursery, the teachers have. The one in the primary school, we should be able to design curriculum or curricula in a manner that as the children go from stage to stage, they will know about nuclear use. About nuclear science, about nuclear technology. Eventually, those who become scientists and technologists and nuclear engineers, thank God for them. But then, the message must permeate all sectors of our societies so that when the time comes to talk about nuclear, the people already are informed. The normal people are informed. Politicians are informed. So it will not be like, not in my backyard, it's dangerous. And, right?
Yeah.
Dangerous things are made safe. If you are thinking about danger, nobody should fly in an airplane. What can be more dangerous than that?
Yeah.
And everything is under human
control. All right, nice.
Yes.
With engineered systems. Okay, so I understand that the legislation for the Yucca Mountain project has lingered for a very long time.
Yes.
And it has not been decided that the Yucca Mountain in Nevada will be used for disposal of nuclear wastes.
Yes.
But on the other side, Onkalo in Finland have designed a very wonderful nuclear waste disposal site.
Yes.
And it stands today as a success story for the nuclear industry.
Yes.
On that ground, I would like to pivot to the aspect of knowing the regulatory requirements that your company requires from a country or that the regulatory agency is requiring from you to have your operations on their soil.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Usually when we talk, people bring out Yucca Mountains. People bring up Yucca Mountains.
Yes.
You see, with the country, United States, they can be slow at things, but when the time comes, they will do it.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
I think the time hasn't come for them. If the time comes, they will do it. Besides that, there are military repositories in the US. We've been told, at a lecture by somebody, a US person who knows. I can't mention the name.
Okay.
But there are military repositories. They know.
Okay.
Do you get the point? Now we have the success story from Finland.
Yeah.
As I've mentioned, when the time comes for the US to do it, they will do it. Someone tells me people make a lot of money out of these things. You see, so it's not something that they want it to go just like that.
Okay.
So there are politics, and then financial interest involved in all this.
Okay.
Now, as you know, and we heard from the discussions this morning on regulations,
yes,
and then regulatory bodies,
yes,
you can see that Africans haven't developed their regulations too well.
Okay.
I'm even surprised at some of the things that I heard this morning. I wanted to ask a question, but I later, drew back, not to embarrass anybody.
Okay.
I'd wanted to find out from those African panelists,
yes,
those Africans on the panel, how they have been regulating, medical diagnostic equipment and then equipment for treatment of cancer and things like that in the hospitals in Africa. Who regulates them? Are those regulations going to be different from regulations that will guide, deployment of nuclear power? Are they going to be related?
Mm.
These are the questions. Do you see? Sometimes you confuse matters,
yeah,
when they are even simple.
Sure.
You're already doing regulation, then you sit on a platform and say that we don't have, someone else even say something to the Fed that they don't have.
Okay.
But you already have.
Yes.
you know?
Yeah, that's
you right. already have. So, that's a problem that we are facing.
Okay.
Uh-huh. There are no regulations yet with respect to spent nuclear fuel management in Africa.
Okay.
In fact, what they say I've seen in documents, I think I've seen it in Kenya. I've seen, for the Ghanaian one, I have read.
Okay.
Right? Which says that the country that comes to build a plant will take the waste away. Mm. That doesn't exist anywhere.
Wow.
You see, you pay and then take the waste away. So, how are you going to pay and take the waste away when you have the possibility of managing it and get the money?
Mm.
So, this is what we must decide. You pay and take the waste away, but you have the geology, the expertise, and the wherewithal to manage the waste and get profits out of it. Which one will be better?
Mm.
So, this is it. These are decisions that we have to make.
I think I'm a bit middle of some conflicting ideas in
yes.
my mind, and I would like you to clear my mind
yeah.
because I have this concept of, okay, somebody has used, it's just like this concept of making Africa the dumping ground.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So someone has used waste,
yes.
used this resource somewhere and
yeah.
now wants to send you the waste.
Yes.
Wonder how it's, because when you bring it to the public discourse,
mm-hmm.
this is likely going to be the analogy
it's a big problem.
They will bring.
Yes.
So how do you plan to overcome this kind of question in the minds of people?
Well, it boils down to, I understand the point you are making.
Yes.
It boils down to traditions and culture.
Okay.
There is a fear aspect of it.
Okay.
And then we not considering humanity in general and we as being part of it.
Okay.
Right?
Hmm.
Uh-huh. I always tell people and my own people that Africa, let's say we take Ghana or Nigeria.
Yes.
We haven't gotten the tradition or culture of managing other people's waste.
Okay.
Do you see?
Yes.
But in some countries, they do. Philippines manages waste for money.
Wow.
It's a huge economic force. Yes, you can check.
I didn't know that.
All right. So some countries do.
Okay.
They recycle or they dispose of, or they recycle and dispose of. Do you get it? They may recycle for use or recycle and dispose of. And it's an economic venture, certain countries embark on. Maybe because of our own deficiencies in technologies and issues of that kind, we are not into ventures of that nature.
Okay.
You see, but let me tell you, in Ghana, we import secondhand clothing, and it's a huge environmental problem now.
Hmm. Not only Ghana.
All right, okay.
Many parts of Africa.
It's Ghana that
and not only clothing, not only clothing,
that is it.
Cars,
that is it. Electronic equipment, mattresses, and all those. What
many
are
many things are second-hand.
They are
and
people's
that's
waste.
People,
all those are people's waste. Mm. And you are comfortable with that.
That's a powerful analog.
That is it.
Analogy.
And we are saying that, okay, somebody has created this waste and you are you're already importing it.
Mm.
And you are even using the clothing on you.
Wow.
There are even secondhand braziers brought from secondhand underwears and things like that
yeah.
that people put on.
Hmm.
And you are not concerned about those. You see?
Interesting.
So this is it. Secondly, the humanity part of it. Come to think of it. And then we say that in our documents, policy documents, it's been written that somebody will come and produce the power for us, build a plan for us, and he takes the waste away. Because you want to die, you don't want to die. Whatever about the person taking it to his country. He is not a human being to fear death, or his death does not concern you.
Yes.
It's also part of humanity. You see, so it's a, as I mentioned earlier, it's a global environmental problem that must be solved globally. Now, those who have the technology have decided that, okay, we'll deploy everywhere in the world to help you also generate electricity, industrialize, and then live well. Right? Some people have offered to do that. They could have kept it, but they see that we all need it because they are also thinking globally. Why can't we do the same? We cannot provide the technology. Let's help solve the waste problem. Is that not good enough?
Very good.
That's thinking humanely. Right.
Interesting. So I want to thank you especially for sparing out the time to come AfriNuke podcast.
Yes.
Today you have talked about the operations of DeepGeo, why Africa, and your operations here, the limits that you have encountered, the brick walls. You have also talked to us your business model and the regulatory requirement and the impact of your operations in Africa and also globally. I would like to give us a kind of summary of the key takeaway you would want people in Africa and also globally to know about nuclear waste and what DeepGeo exists to do about it.
All right, okay. So as we've mentioned already, we are in a global village, as we say it, that we affect one another.
Yes.
That we share things together in this one village that we all have. What affects you affects me, right? And we can live together here in peace when we cooperate, when we try to help one another. That is what DeepGeo stands for. That we can help some other people to solve their environmental problem while we also get the money to develop, to do other things. You see, the level of unemployment in our system is very high. Our national debts are so huge. You see, I'm glad that even at this conference, they've not mentioned, you know, sovereign guarantees and things like that to finance nuclear power programs. But in Ghana, those issues came up strongly last year. And I think the organizers have rethought this and they've not brought those issues up, you see. So that is it. For DeepGeo, we think it's a good thing. We need to do away with fear, right? And that we can manage it. And let me tell Africans that, you see, poor maintenance culture is not something to glory in, right? If we have we need to cultivate a culture, we have to cultivate it.
Sure.
You see, we have to cultivate it. And we are not poor at it. In our homes, the women wake up at 4 a.m. and begin to sweep. That is part of maintenance.
Yes.
We are not poor at it. You go to the mining companies, they have strict health, safety, and security regime. African people work there. And they keep to those regimes. And I think the same things will happen when we deploy nuclear power plants and deal with the waste as we be. So these are thoughts that I want to share with Africans, that, you see, we shouldn't downgrade ourselves too much. Right? It's all about rules. It's about the science. And the wise people, white people, they don't do anything differently. It's by abiding by rules and doing the things that must be done on a daily basis. And Africans can do it. We also can do it. You are a learned guy in the field. You can do it, right? Any other person. And we have PhDs, professors in these fields. And we are still thinking we cannot. So why are you holding those titles for? What are you holding those titles for? Let's make use of it. Bring people along. Teach them. This is how it's done. This is how you behave. Right?
Yeah.
Like at any workplace, there are rules and regulations that guide that particular workplace. Mm. People adhere to them and the work progresses.
Mm.
It is the same thing, same principle. This is it.
Well, it's been a very informative, insightful, and very educating session with you. And I want to say a very big thank you for sparing the time to be on AfriNuke podcast. And I hope to have some other time to converse with you as we go forward in this endeavor.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Mr. David.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Take care.